Hello, everybody.
Greetings.
Welcome back to Don't Fuck With Ghosts, the podcast about all things haunted, spooky, and supernatural. We are your Blost sisters. I am Betsy.
I'm Greer.
And just in case anybody new here is listening, it's Blost. B-L-H-O-S-T. Not blow.
And for context, you gotta listen to the first episode.
Episode two, actually, is when we explain it.
You gotta go listen to the second episode.
Which is actually good because the audio quality on the first episode is not good.
That's tea. You gotta go back in the archives.
It's true. Can you believe we've been doing this for 2 years?
I was literally about to say, it's crazy that we've already done, this is our 32nd episode.
Yeah.
Which, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's actually been just over 2 years.
Yeah.
That I convinced Greer to do this with me.
Yeah, it was a Galentine's Day business meeting. I had no idea.
Oh my God, yeah. I swooped in with my PowerPoint presentation.
It was, she presented a business plan. She was like, this is what we're going to do. I've researched microphones. I've researched topics. Here's how we're going to do it. Okay. And I was like, sure.
Greer's the one that came up with the name, though.
Was I really?
Yeah, because I was like, what should we be called? Like, I couldn't think of anything. But then we were going on about how, like, we want the vibe to be like we're talking about spooky stories, but like we absolutely do not mess with that stuff.
Condone.
And then you're like, oh, don't fuck with ghosts, don't fuck with cats.
Like, I can't believe that was me. Yeah, I had no idea.
Was you.
I had no,
because you said that and I was like, oh,
I had no epiphany. Idea. I literally thought in my memory that you had the name picked out already.
I had a list of names, but that was not on there.
I'm a genius.
I mean, it's true. In certain things.
Isn't that funny? It's a funny conversation.
A genius with no capacity for memory.
That's true, which is funny because my head is so large, you'd think some of the brain
what's
power.
In there?
Certainly not a memory vault. Although
it's true.
Sometimes, like, I'll be telling Corey stuff. I was telling him about the SOL review the other day, which is like a like event that we did in our elementary school.
Second grade.
And I was singing him some of the songs.
SOL review.
And like Go My Son, which I'm not going to say. And the Water Cycle Boogie. And yeah. So these are all memories from over 20 years ago. And then Corey was like, hey, what did we have for dinner last night?
Yeah.
No idea. I had no clue.
Yeah. Well, music is actually, it's stored in a different part of your brain.
I didn't know that.
Or like, it's like, like its own category of memories, and it's stronger than like just day-to-day things.
That makes sense because we had a Latin teacher.
Yep.
We had a Latin teacher who taught us songs for the different declensions.
She was also the chorus teacher.
Yeah. But I remember those songs to this day. Couldn't tell you a lick of Latin, but
first declension.
I-S-I-E-N-N-E. Singular.
Wait, is that third declension?
Plural. E-S-E-M-I-B-U-S-E-S-I-B-U-S.
I think that's the third, right?
Because we'll have to ask
first,
Isabel. I don't
know. No, because second declension. Oh my God, we're going on a rant. Sorry. Latin. 5 years of it. Didn't teach me shit. Okay. Anyway.
But it is crazy. I think especially because, I mean, if this was our full-time job, 30 episodes would not be impressive. But considering the fact that
it's like a hobby,
yeah. It's like working, I'm working full-time, you've been working, and also now are in school full-time.
Yeah.
So it's exciting.
But it's like fun for us. So I like doing it.
Yeah. Oh
and
my gosh.
It's my
I feel
little
like,
creative outlet.
I feel like when we get to 50, we should do something special.
Oh my gosh, we should do something crazy.
We should wear party hats.
Live stream on the Patreon.
It would be literally the most boring live stream ever. You and I
be
just
like two people there. It'd be Nikki.
Like, shout out Nikki. She's always going to show up
fan.
For us. Nikki's going to show up.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm just grateful for this little spooky community.
Yeah.
And
it's a fun time.
Yeah. It's a good time. So expect more from us.
Let's see. What else should we catch up on? No.
Wait,
that's
talk
going
about
on.
The trips you're about to go on.
Oh, yes. True. Okay. So I have a sabbatical coming up, which is Betsy's shaking her head.
Lucky bitch.
Because it's crazy. I know.
I would never think that your job, specifically your job, would ever like let you do that based on how you entered it.
I agree. And yet here we are. So
miracles do happen.
Yes. I have a 30-day sabbatical coming up. I'm going to, surprise, surprise, Scotland with my mom.
For is the that first the first part. One or is Asheville the first?
No, that's the first one.
Wow.
I'm so excited. We're going to obviously fly into Edinburgh and then do a trip to the Isle of Skye.
Oh my
and
God.
She's never been up there before, so I'm so excited to show her.
Is the whole trip in the Highlands, or are you going to stay in Edinburgh for any of the days?
We're staying in Edinburgh. We're bookending it. So we're flying into Edinburgh, staying there for a day and a half or so.
Okay.
Then doing the Highlands. Then coming back and either doing one final day in Edinburgh or going to St. Andrews for a day, because my mom loves golf.
She does.
And I want to see if I can get us to go to the driving range there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
She would really like that.
Yeah, she would love that. Are you going to take Jeannie on a ghost tour to the vaults?
Well, we already did that when they visited.
She's done that. Okay.
But, like, I will go again. And
it's one of the best ghost tours that I've been on.
It's so good. And, like, she's my mom, so she'll want to go.
Good.
So... So I'm doing that, and then Corey and I are going to Asheville and the Smokies afterwards, which will be super fun. Also crazy because isn't that mountain range like also connected to the mountains and highlands in Scotland, like Appalachia? That's all
Appalachia
one.
Goes to Scotland?
Yeah. Like
what?
When it was Pangea.
Oh
this is
my
crazy.
God. So like it goes
Pangea,
into the ocean and then.
It was all the same mountain
that
range.
There's mountains in the ocean?
I, once again, can't think about the ocean too much.
I hate the ocean.
Especially
I love the ocean, but I hate it.
When that thing imploded, my brain.
What, the submarine?
The submarine.
Oh my God.
I think Corey was concerned because I could not stop reading about the implosion and like what the ocean is like. It was bad.
Oh my God. Well, I also watch a lot of, like, I love the subgenre of horror that is either shark horror or like ocean themed horror. Mm-hmm. Like when people are stuck in a submarine under, like at the bottom of it, or like if you want to mix the two, 47 meters down.
So good. Oh my gosh.
Because like the ocean is terrifying, so it really gets my heart pitter-pattering.
Yeah, the ocean is so scary. But yes, the Appalachia and the Highlands are all the same mountain range.
That's crazy.
Crazy. So we're doing that, and then I'm ending the trip with my cousin Katie, who listens to the pod. Shout out Katie. We're going to Disney World, and we'll be there over my birthday. And that's going to be so fun.
That's so fun.
I think we're going to be in Animal Kingdom on my birthday, which is going to be fantastic.
Yes.
You can see all the animals.
Are you going to go to any of, like, Universal? Or do you only...
No, I think we're just doing Disney. And even though I'm not a Star Wars person, I am excited to go to the Star Wars land. Because
okay,
it
that's
seems,
the other thing I was gonna
it
ask.
Seems... I don't know... Like, I don't know if I will wait in line for the rides there. Because
yeah.
I know that's probably the most popular ride in the park. And the lines are always, like, hours long. But that part of the park is, like, super immersive and really
yes.
well done. And I think I'll be able to
They're
enjoy it.
They're just
going
to have stormtroopers walking around.
They literally do.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I've been watching videos.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's my sabbatical. And then I come home, and then I go right to work. Back to work
back
after
to
30
work.
Days. Yeah. She's a working woman. Kind of.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll be talking to my mom, and she'll be like, Greer, do you actually work at your job? And I'll be like, yeah.
Well,
sometimes.
Your mom was in a profession where she was on her feet 24/7.
Very true.
So,
yeah.
Like,
it's a different kind. I'm like, yeah, I'm sending my emails.
Think, yeah. Office job's not for Jeannie.
No. Oh, my God. She would not enjoy that at all. But, yeah, those are my trips coming up. Do you have anything? No.
Well, I'm going
to. You have beach early.
I have. Beach in July into early August. I'm going to Shrinemont the weekend after we go wedding dress shopping.
That's
so I'm
so
super
fun.
Excited for that. I just want to be in the mountains with my book.
Your whole family?
Just my parents. My one of well, either brother could come for like a day.
That's gonna be so nice. Oh, but the weather's gonna be really pretty too.
I'm honestly okay if it rains because I love rain in the mountains.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Like, I love when you go to the Adirondacks, the smell of the rain and the trees and, like, the creaking wood of the porch that you're sitting on.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Oh, I was about to ask, what book will you be reading? But you're going to be reading Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, most
yes,
likely.
Yes, that one. I'm glad you still, I'm glad you remember it because I, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. You know what? I got it.
You got it.
I got it.
She's got it, folks. Don't worry. She's got it.
Yeah. Unless I, like, finish it before then, because that's,
could.
Like, a month away.
Do you have something on deck for after you're done?
Yeah, I have a few books. I might start ACOTAR.
Ooh, okay. If you do, let me know.
Yeah.
I like it.
I actually started it on an audiobook while I was cooking the other day, but I wasn't like really paying attention because it was just like background noise. Mm-hmm. So I also have it in hard copy. So I'm definitely wanting to read that. I also have the book I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
I think I have that.
Which is really scary. That's the one about the Golden State Killer. I don't know if I'm going to be wanting to read that in the mountains.
Oh,
staying in a cabin with
certainly not. That
is not good security. So probably not that one, but maybe ACOTAR.
I feel like you're going to love ACOTAR.
Yeah.
Katie, one fantasy. Disney with loves them.
Yeah.
They're very addicting.
I haven't gotten into any of the like mainstream fantasy that's been going viral in the last year. So I'm excited.
I think
it's what everyone's talking about.
And I think Fourth Wing is the similar yes. vibe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Isabel's mom gave me Mad Honey, and I don't know what it's about, but she gave it to me because she said I would like it. So ooh. I have a feeling it's like spooky.
Okay, well, I see that it's written by Jodi Picoult. Did you ever read My Sister's Keeper?
I tried. Oh, no, not My Sister's Keeper.
My Sister's Keeper got me fucked up.
But yeah, so I hope it's not sad.
It might not be.
Maybe it's more spooky than sad.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, we'll expect a report back at some in the coming episodes.
Okay.
If you do get to it.
Yeah, that works. But I probably will read the first two books before that one, so it might be a while.
And then I think you'll get swept up in the ACOTAR universe.
Oh, that's true.
So it might be like a
while. It might be a while. I might save that one for the beach. I feel like that's a good beach read.
Yeah, that probably is.
Yeah. Okay, well, before I jump into my story for the day, we do have a listener story. It was sent to our Instagram from our listener, Natalie. She said, "Hey, Betsy and Greer, my name is Nat. Just popping in to say I absolutely love DFWG. I found you guys recently and have been on a binge. Loved the Monte Cristo Homestead episode. Aussie represent. I have a small story I'd like to share if you have a moment. My Nana and I were very close. She was my drinking partner, best friend, and we were always the last to leave a family gathering. I love that she was drinking partners with her grandma.
I know, that's very sweet.
It's iconic. Back in 2021, she passed away from cancer. It spread rapidly, and she had a week to live, so I spent her final week with her until she passed. As soon as I got home, I threw myself back into work. I'm an au pair, so I could get back into my daily routine. It was about 2 days after her passing when I was tidying up one of the kids' rooms when I heard a bang. A story projector toy had fallen off the blanket chest. I heard the words, "Kisses for you," and I burst into tears, and for a brief moment, I felt her. I don't have a logical explanation to why this happened. I've heard all the stories on the kids' toy. Those words were never spoken. The children weren't home that day, and I was alone, and the toy was sitting in the middle of the chest, which is flat. Oddly enough, the toy hasn't worked since, even with a battery change. I think it was her way of letting me know things will be all right.
Oh,
that's a very beautiful, very sad story. But I think we've told stories similar on the theme of like loved ones sending us signs after they've passed, just to like letting us know that everything's going to be okay and that they're still here and
thinking of us. I think the logical explanation is that was your Nana.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah.
Thank you for trusting us with your story.
Yes, thank you so much, and thank you for listening. We're so glad that you're enjoying it and are a part of our spooky community. And if any of you else listening out there have a spooky or haunted encounter that you'd like to share, you can send it to our email at dfwgpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, so I guess I will get into my story for the week. Did you know what I was talking about until you saw it today?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So I kind of wanted to do like an unsolved mystery this week instead of like another haunted house or something that we've done similar. And I went down a rabbit hole. So in 1587, a group of English settlers established a colony off the coast of present day North Carolina. Led by John White, the colony mysteriously vanished without a trace, leaving behind only a cryptic message carved on a tree. Despite numerous expeditions, investigations, and theories proposed over the centuries, the fate of the settlers remains unknown, shrouded in speculation and legend. The lost colony of Roanoke continues to captivate historians, archaeologists, and enthusiasts alike, fueling endless speculation about what truly transpired on that remote island over four centuries ago. So, of course, we are going to explore each and every theory together here today.
Yes. Yay! This is going to be fun.
Yeah, but before we get into the theories, we have to go through all the historical context and all the players that were involved, because there was a lot happening. And so, yeah, let's get into that now. So the establishment of the Roanoke Colony was an attempt by Sir Walter Raleigh to found the first permanent English settlement in America by direction of Queen Elizabeth I. So Raleigh quickly arranged an expedition headed by Philip Amadas and Arthur Barlow. They made landfall on July 13th of 1584 at an inlet north of Hatterask Island. The Secotan tribe, also there's a lot of Native Americans mentioned in this story, and I may mispronounce the tribe or the name, and I apologize in advance. So the Secotan tribe, who controlled Roanoke Island and the mainland between Albemarle Sound and the Pamlico River, soon made contact with the English and established friendly relations. Because they received so much help from the natives, the voyagers decided that they could return to England in order to bring back an entire settlement's worth of people. Because they're like, oh, this land is habitable and the natives are being nice to us. And so basically they wouldn't have survived without the natives' help.
Yep. Yeah.
But they think that they can do it on their own. So they brought back two natives with them to England, a Wanchese, who was a Secotan, and Monteo, who was a Croatan, whose mother was the chieftain of Croatoan Island. The expedition's reports describe the region as a pleasant and bountiful land, basically claiming it to be the Garden of Eden. So a second expedition was sent out, and the Roanoke Colony was founded by Governor Ralph Lane in 1585 in present-day Dare County, North Carolina. However, Lane's relationship with the local tribes is really bad. So the colony quickly became troubled by a lack of supplies due to these poor relations that forced many of the natives out to neighboring areas away from the Roanoke Colony. There was a local chieftain that was partial to the settlers, but after he passed away, a man named Wingina took over as leader and subsequently changed his name to Pemissapon, which means one who watches. Mm. And he was not a fan of the colonizers, as he shouldn't have been. Pemissapon actually convinced Lane that all the neighboring tribes were planning to attack his colony and set up a meeting between them where both sides arrived expecting hostilities. His end goal was essentially to present Lane as a dangerous threat to get the rest of the native populations to stop helping them. His plan works, and the colonists end up having to beg for their food. Tensions continue to rise until Lane and his men attack Pemissapon. They end up bringing back his severed head and impaling it outside the colony's fort.
Oh my gosh.
So while the power dynamics seemed to be shifting among the native tribes and the immediate threat to the colonists was mitigated, they still needed more supplies in order to survive. So a resupply mission by Sir Richard Grenville was delayed. So Lane ended up abandoning the colony and returning to England with Sir Francis Drake in 1586. But he did leave behind a small detachment to protect Raleigh's claim to the land. So now another expedition is being sent out, this time being led by John White, who's like the main player in this story. And they land on the same island in 1587 and set up another settlement, including his pregnant daughter, Eleanor, who would go on to give birth to her own daughter, Virginia, who was the first child born in North America from English parentage.
Crazy.
Which is kind of cool. However, when they arrive, they find a dead settler on the shore who had clearly not received a proper burial. Like, he was, like, half buried. Mm-hmm. And, like, the rest of his skeletal remains were, like, out. And the other English folk who were supposed to be there were nowhere to be found. This isn't, like, the main disappearance. This is, like...
Oh, my gosh. This is a different one?
Yeah. This were, like, the people that Lane had left behind.
Wow.
They were, like, unaccounted for. And there was only, like, maybe three of them.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't that many. But it was, like, okay, what's going on? Like, all these people came, like, thinking this was going to be the Garden of Eden. They get there. Their friends are dead or missing.
Yeah.
And, like... things are not good with the natives.
It's not boding well.
Like, it's not. Yes. Mm-hmm. So a year later in 1588, White would return to England, intending to bring more supplies back to the colony. However, when he gets there, the Anglo-Spanish War delays his return by 3 years. So, like, he leaves this new colony that it's already like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
And the person who's like running the whole shindig, who's like supposed to keep him safe and like tell them what to do, is like, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to England. I'll bring back some supplies. But he gets stuck over there for 3 years to fight this war. Doesn't end up returning until 1590. And when he finally did return, they find the settlement fortified, but abandoned.
Oh.
And as they're walking up the shore, they pass one tree that has the letter C-R-O carved into it. But once they get to the, like, all the way to the where the colony was, mm-hmm. they find the cryptic word Croatoan carved into a palisade, which is essentially, like, the fenced border yeah. around wow. the colony. Which White interpreted to mean that the colonists had relocated to Croatoan Island. However, when they tried to go cross, it's like not that far, mm-hmm. but when they tried to cross over to that island, rough seas and a lost anchor forced the mission to go back to England. They couldn't even cross.
All the way back to England?
Yes. They were like, they gave up basically and were like, we're not, because like the wind was so bad. They couldn't go anywhere.
Oh my gosh.
And so they're like, all right, well, I guess we're going back home. And, like, he, this was, like, he was trying to find his daughter and his granddaughter and, like, the rest of his family, and he couldn't. So he had to go back home to England, and the fate of approximately 112 to 121 colonists remains unknown to this day.
I didn't realize it was that many people.
Yeah, it's over 100.
Wow. And mm-hmm. so those 100 people were the ones that came when, right. and they were like, so, oh, these those three guys are dead or right. missing.
And then they came, and then John White goes back home to get more supplies.
And then ends up getting stuck there for because 3 years. War.
Yes.
And he was supposed to come back in a year's time.
He was supposed to go there and come back. So however long that takes on a ship in the 1500s. Oh, so several months, maybe a yeah. year. Yeah, maybe a year.
That's wild.
Yeah. So now we're going to get into the theories. So the primary theories are that either there was conflicts with the local Native Americans. One prevalent theory suggests that the colonists may have been attacked and killed by Native American tribes in the area. Evidence of this includes the word Croatoan carved into a tree, possibly indicating the name of a nearby tribe, and the lack of signs of struggle at the abandoned settlement. Another really prominent theory is that the colony integrated with Native tribes. Mm. So this proposal says that the colonists may have assimilated into nearby Native American communities, either voluntarily or forcibly. Some historians point to reports of Native Americans with European features and artifacts found among various tribes as potential evidence of this scenario. And actually, years later, when John Smith comes to Jamestown, mm-hmm. he does his own investigation into the lost colony. And I think he either talked to some Native Americans that told him that there was a place or a small colony of Native Americans, but they also had Europeans there with like buildings with walls and like thatched roofs and stuff like that. Oh. And then another theory is that harsh conditions and food shortages may have led to the demise of the colony. Without proper supplies and support from England, the settlers could have succumbed to starvation, disease, and exposure.
With that theory, though, I'm like, well, then where did 121 bodies go?
And we'll get into it. Okay. So that leads me into our next theory. I divided all the theories into like subcategories, and we're getting into conspiracy theories okay, now.
Love that.
The first one was like primary, kind of plausible yeah. theories. Now we're getting into conspiracy, and this one is that they turned to cannibalism. And the reason that there would be no remains is that they used every single part of the human body. They, like, ground down the bones to, basically a dust that they could put into things that they used for ailments or other things.
I mean, the Donner Party.
Yeah.
Which I, up until literally 2 weeks ago when I was hanging out with my mom, thought that that whole story took place in the 80s.
What?
Yeah. I was confusing it with that soccer team. Who they like their airplane crashed.
The rugby team.
Or yeah. the rugby team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my mom that was the 70s, she was like, yeah. Are you kidding me?
I'm with Jeannie on that.
I knew you would
be. You're crazy. Okay, but so there are two theories about cannibalism. Either the people of Roanoke were the victims of cannibals, or they had to resort to it to stay alive. The people of Roanoke could have been picked off gradually, or cannibals could have kidnapped them and disposed of them that way. The fact that no bodies were found sounds like a time-consuming endeavor, but White was gone for 3 years, and if cannibals attacked the settlers, they had more than enough time to dispose of all the bodies. However, there is no evidence that any Native American tribes were practicing cannibalism, so this is a less likely theory than the people of Roanoke becoming cannibals themselves.
Wow.
And I didn't know this, but when I was doing my research, the people of Jamestown, there is evidence that they resorted to cannibalism to get through the winter.
I've never heard that part of that history. I mean, no wonder they don't want to advertise that at Jamestown with, like, all the recreations and stuff.
Yeah.
That's...
I had no idea, but I think that's why people were like, well, maybe they did the same thing.
I just can't imagine what it would be like to have to make that decision for your survival.
Maybe when it comes... I don't ever want to have to be in a position where my survival instincts kick in.
Yep. Because I'm sure that's what it is. Yeah, like, if I don't eat...
Well, you know what's really interesting? I recently watched that movie that came out last year, I think, that is about the rugby team that crashed in the Andes. Mm-hmm. And it's not, there's a movie from the 90s called Alive. This one is not that. It's called The Society of Snow, I think.
I have heard about that movie.
Yeah, it was really, really good. And they actually had Hispanic people playing the team rather than white people. So that was a step up. It was so interesting to hear them, like, basically, because they were all Catholic, so it had to be really severe for them to partake in cannibalism, and they start basically justified it as being, like, the body and blood, basically. Yeah,
communion.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah.
That feels slightly blasphemous, but I'm not going to hold it against them because they were starving to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no judgment for somebody just trying to literally survive.
Yeah. It's honestly amazing because they were so high up. There was no trees anywhere. They didn't have firewood to make fires. They didn't have animals to hunt.
I need to watch this movie.
Which is why they had to eat each other.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Wow.
Very intense, but very good.
So it's possible that the people of Roanoke resorted to cannibalism. Not impossible.
Correct. Another theory is that they were murdered. So, like I said, in 1607, Captain John Smith tried to uncover what happened at Roanoke. He claimed that Chief Powhatan told him that he killed the people of the colony to retaliate against them for living with another tribe that refused to ally with him. Allegedly, Powhatan showed Smith items he took from Roanoke to support his story, including a musket barrel and a brass mortar and pestle. By 1609, the story reached England, and King James and the Royal Council blamed Powhatan for the missing colonists. William Strachey seemed to back up the story, confirming the slaughter with his investigation in his work, The History of Travail into Virginia Britannia. Powhatan claimed that he ordered the killings because there was a prophecy that he would be conquered and overthrown by people from that area. However, contemporary historians and anthropologists dispute the story because there were never any bodies or archaeological evidence found to support the claim, but it has persisted for more than 400 years. Recently, author and researcher Brandon Fulham examined Smith and Strachey's sources and suggested that the Powhatan massacre could have been the 15 settlers left behind from the second expedition, still leaving the mystery of Roanoke unsolved. So, like, the people that I said had disappeared that first time could have been that. So if that were true, then where did all these 100 people go?
Right, exactly.
On the other hand, given the ongoing conflicts between England and Spain during the time of the colony, some suggest that the settlers may have been captured or killed by Spanish forces operating in the region. So at that time, there was a lot of pirating going on. The Spanish was up and down the coast as well. And the reason that they chose Roanoke is that it was close enough to the ocean that they could get ships in, but it was hidden enough that they wouldn't be spotted by Spanish ships. So the theory is that if they were found, then the Spanish likely attacked them.
Wow. I've never heard that theory.
Yeah. I hadn't either.
I wonder, though, like, if Spanish forces had come in and they had their big-ass ships in the water, I wonder if, like, wouldn't neighboring tribes have seen those, like, potentially have seen those ships and, like, watched those people be taken?
Like, it's possible.
They would have.
It's possible, but they were also at that point literally running away from the colonists.
Fair. Yeah.
So maybe they were like, well, I don't, like, they were just trying to be as far away from them as possible.
Yeah. Which sucks.
Yeah. So, interestingly, in 1937, a tourist found an inscribed stone and brought it to Emory University to be examined for authenticity. Dr. Haywood Pierce, a professor of American history, didn't claim that the stone was authentic, but it didn't contradict what was known at the time. The inscription was consistent with the phrasing of the time, and the colonists would have had tools to carve such a message. The inscriptions on the stone allegedly were written by Eleanor White, John White's daughter. And they stated that Eleanor's husband and daughter were dead and asked whoever found the stone to tell her father. The inscription read, Ananias Dare and Virginia went hence unto heaven, 1591. Ooh. Anya Englishman Shoe, John White, Governor Via. The other side of the stone reported that only 7 of the Roanoke colonists were left alive and Native Americans had killed the rest. It was signed with the initials EWD, which are the same as Eleanor White Dare.
Wow.
Between 1937 and 1940, 47 more stones had been found dating until 1599. However, in 2015, a History Channel documentary detailed the study of the stones by archaeologists who found that the first stone was authentic, but the others were hoaxes.
No.
Concluding that they were all created with a drill.
Bastards.
Yeah. So, and also in my research, I found out that after that first stone was discovered, the scientists were basically like, hey, if any more of these stones are found, we'll give you a reward.
There you go. That'll
so
do it.
Then, yeah. But I think the same guy made all 47.
See, if you're going to be a scammer, you got to be subtle about the scam.
Yeah, because they were all made the same way, which is why they think it was all from the same guy.
That's insane.
Yeah.
You got to make like 4 or 5 others.
Yes, not 47.
About, you know? 47 is wild.
Yeah. Crazy. Damn. And like, wouldn't they? I feel like the colonists might also, I guess rocks last longer, but like, I feel like they would have, like, they could have used bark or something. Like, why would they do that
I feel like
47 times
into
on a
takes
stone?
A long time. And if you're, if people are around you are dying, I don't think sitting there chiseling away is going to be at the top of your priority list.
Nah.
Damn.
Nah. Okay, so this was really interesting that I read about. In November 2011, researchers at the First Colony Foundation noticed 2 corrective patches on a map that had been painted by John White himself in 1585, called La Virginie Pars. At their request, the British Museum examined the original map with a light table. And just like something out of National Treasure, one of the patches at the confluence of the Roanoke and Chowan Rivers revealed a previously invisible symbol representing
up.
A fort.
Oh my God.
As the symbol is not to scale, it covers an area on the map representing thousands of acres in Birdie County, North Carolina. However, the location is presumed to be near the 16th century Wapamoc village of Metaquem. In 2012, when a team prepared to excavate where the symbol indicated, archaeologist Nicholas Lucchetti suggested they name the location Site X, as in X marks the spot. In an October 2017 statement, the First Colony Foundation reported finding fragments of Tudor pottery and weapons at Site X and concluded that these indicate a small group of colonists residing peacefully in the area. It's believed that it was marked in invisible ink to hide the location from the Spanish if they were to gain possession of the map. However, it cannot be proven that these items weren't brought by other expeditions, such as the 1585 Lane Colony, so the expedition before John White's voyage with the 100 people that disappeared, or the trading post established by Nathaniel Batts in the 1650s. So they're like, well, we can't prove that these items weren't brought here previously or after these people disappeared.
Still.
But, like, a hidden location on a map?
That's crazy. How are they doing invisible ink back then?
So, from my research, I found out you can make invisible ink with pee.
The urine? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool, though.
Yeah.
Imagine being in the room and watching that invisible. Oh my god.
I feel like Nicolas Cage.
I know. I feel like it would be like watching the moon landing. You'd be like, ah!
Oh my god. Yes. But since we are who we are not stopping at the earthly plausible theories. Yes. There have been many supernatural and religious explanations that incorporate Native American belief systems. Obviously, there is no scientific basis for these theories, but they are still taken very seriously by the Native American populations as explanations on what happened to the missing settlers of Roanoke. They mainly revolve around Native American spirits that help explain away not only the behavior of the colonists before they disappeared, but also why the colonists disappeared without a trace. Mm. So, Native Americans believe in a wild spirit in the form of a beast called a Wendigo, which we have done a whole episode about, if you want to listen to it. So when people resort to eating human flesh, as in the case of cannibalism, their bodies are taken over by a Wendigo. If the people of Roanoke resorted to cannibalism, then according to this belief, they are still alive, roaming the woods of North Carolina in the form of Wendigos.
Wow.
Ooh. Don't be wandering in them woods.
Nope. Especially not in Appalachia.
Yeah. And also, in my research, I found these people were talking about this encounter this one guy had in Roanoke. And it was like, he made this whole YouTube video. And it was like the werewolf of Roanoke. And he like saw one or two of these quote unquote beasts like on the island. And I'm like, could have been a Wendigo.
It could have been.
Who are we
to say it's not?
Because the way they described it, I was like, that sounds like a Wendigo. And I'm more inclined to believe in those than werewolves, personally. But, you know.
Well, especially in that region.
Yeah, in that region, with a rich history of Native folklore. But, yeah. So, that's one supernatural theory. Another is that the Croatoan belief system includes a spirit on the island that had the power to absorb humans into the landscape. Whoa. If the spirit was offended or angered, it would turn people into trees, animals, stones, or any other part of the land. If the colonists were exploiting resources or abusing the land, it could have angered the spirit. This means that the people of Roanoke didn't disappear at all. They were just absorbed into the land.
I kind of love that.
Yeah.
A lot. And this is far less serious, but reminds me of in Pirates of the Caribbean, how on Davy Jones's ship, his like crewmates become a part of the ship and they get covered in the barnacles.
That's
and,
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That myth or that legend, or that theory.
I'm just like imagining it not all happening at once, but like people like start disappearing and like people can't figure out why.
Yeah.
Or like where they go.
It's like he's just another tree, like, another rock, another bush.
He's like slowly morphs into a tree.
PETA in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
I think that's my favorite theory so far.
Yeah. So the Croatoans also believe in an entity referred to as the reptilian devil of the woods, an evil spirit that could attach itself to people. The spirit made people violent, greedy, and paranoid. The Croatoans believed that the reptilian spirit had possessed the settlers once they started to turn on each other after John White left for England to retrieve more supplies.
Oh.
So it's like when people start fighting with each other. And they're, like, possessed by the spirit and, like, ended up killing each other.
Wow.
But I feel like if that had happened, there would have been remains. Unless the reptilian demon ate everybody.
Or, like, tossed them into the water and they got swept away.
Or the reptilian demon worked with the other spirit that absorbed it into the earth.
Yes.
So they killed each other and then they all became trees.
Now, I like that theory even more.
Replant the earth.
I just love the idea of the, I mean, not that these like colonists were individually bad or evil, like if they were also just trying to survive and they were plopped down there by this rich guy that ran away. But I do love the idea of colonists who would go on to destroy the land that the natives had been like shepherding and guarding for their whole lives. I love the idea of those people, like nature pulling them back and saying, you're going to add to this land now. You're no longer going to take from it. You're going to become it and add to it.
I love that.
I think that imagery is very powerful.
Yeah. Not to say that all of these colonists were probably deserved to die, but
Yeah, we can't know for sure. Like, of course, it's never good to wish death upon anyone. But yes,
yes,
interesting to think about.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, this next theory really got me scratching my noggin.
All right, let's go.
So, as I mentioned earlier, the word Croatoan was found carved into a fence post at the abandoned colony, and its presence at the site is one of the most confusing mysteries of Roanoke. Why was it found there? The leading theory is that the colonists went to Croatoan Island, now known as Hatteras Island, and in his writings, White interpreted the carved messages as the colonists' new location. But again, as I described earlier, his attempts to get to Croatoan Island were unsuccessful because of a storm. They had to sail out to sea, and after the storm had passed, the ship's crew did not want to go back. A heartsick White ended up sailing back to England, and he never returned to Roanoke and believed that his family was dead. The main scholar who supports this theory is Scott Dawson, co-founder of the Croatoan Archaeological Society. He and his excavation team found a slate writing tablet, 16th century gun hardware, parts of swords, a rapier hilt, pottery shards, and even a floral clothing clasp belonging to a woman. He believes that the colonists lived with the relatively friendly Croatoans, eventually intermixing. However, the word Croatoan has historically been connected to other mysterious happenings over the centuries and is believed by some to be an indicator of a curse.
Oh, wow.
So we talked a lot about the mystery surrounding the death of Edgar Allan Poe, but somehow I missed this tiny detail. In his final state of delirium before his death, allegedly one of the last words he said was Croatoan.
Whoa.
Which, like,
ooh. I've got
people saying shit, but like that'll be kind of crazy.
I got a little chill up my spine.
And Poe's official cause of death is still unknown, and his medical records and death certificate are lost, so we will never know what happened to him the night that he died. In 1888, the stagecoach robber Black Bart carved the word into the wall of his cell before he was released from prison. And a month after he was released, he was never seen or heard from again.
Wow.
The last bed that horror writer Ambrose Bierce slept in before he disappeared in Mexico in 1913 also had the word Croatoan carved into one of the posts. And strangely, in 1921, Croatoan was written on the last page of the logbook of a ship, Carol A. Deering, when it crashed on Cape Hatteras near Croatoan Island. When it was discovered, the ship was missing its entire crew, but there was food that had been prepared for the next day.
Oh, that's so suspicious.
And finally, in 1937, renowned pilot Amelia Earhart...
Shut up. Sorry.
...disappeared on her attempt to circumnavigate the world. It was later found that the word Croatoan had been written in her personal journal before she had set off on her journey.
What? Like, had she used... It was just the word was written somewhere? Or it had been used
like,
in...
Yeah, I wasn't able to find any, like, context about, like, if it was written in a sentence or not. But it was written somewhere in her journal before she took off.
Gosh. That is really, like, unsettling.
That's like a lot of coincidences.
It's a lot of coincidences, and it makes you think, like, is it the person themselves, they write that word, and in that way they, like, seal their fate, or is somebody else kind of writing, like,
so
writing
it and marking their fate? That there's a theory that, like, the word Croatoan is presented to these people from another entity. And, like, they kind of unknowingly are, like, writing it. Yeah.
Ooh. Almost like sleepwalking in a way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And earlier when I talked about John White coming with his voyage and, like, going onto the shore and, like, passing that first tree that said C-R-O on it, mm-hmm. Some of the theory is that they were trying to write that message again, like, Croatoan again, but they were, like, being chased by something, so they couldn't finish it.
Oh, my gosh.
Ooh. So,
ooh, that's mystery. Really, really spooky.
Yeah. However, there is a significant lack of any concrete evidence or historical records to corroborate any of these theories, plausible or otherwise, which only adds to the overall mystery of what happened to these people. But I wanted to talk a little bit about haunted Roanoke in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, expanding on an earlier theory, many historians who believed the Roanoke colonists integrated themselves into the local Native American tribes also tend to believe that Eleanor Dare was among them. Legend has it that Eleanor, along with her daughter Virginia, were worried John White would never return with fresh supplies to the colony, so they had to rely on the locals in order to survive. Several years passed, and Virginia Dare, now a grown woman, got into some type of quarrel with one of the natives, not knowing that the man in question was considered to possess magical powers. I think he was, like, a medicine guru, that kind of thing. The Native American is said to have put a curse on Virginia that would begin immediately upon her death. It's unknown how or when Virginia died, but the legend states that Virginia's spirit became permanently trapped in the body of a white doe. And to this day, people visit Roanoke Island in the hopes of seeing this now famous doe, and many have claimed to have seen her wandering about the island.
Wow.
Which, like, I feel like a white doe is pretty rare.
Yeah.
It's like albinism in...
Yeah, I've never even...
It makes me think of a lumpy deer.
Oh, my God. You guys. We, at the beach in high school...
Outer Banks, again.
The North Carolina connection. There was this deer that we saw, and he was covered in lumps.
Yeah.
And I hope
they
he's okay.
They were swinging from his
I'm
neck.
But I'm sure he was not okay.
No.
But yeah, so no white does, but a lumpy deer.
Yeah.
A white doe is also just a very, like...
It's very, like, angelic.
Yeah, innocent.
Innocent. Yeah. So then there is the Roanoke Island Inn. During the 1860s, Asa Jones and his wife Martha built a modest yet charming building on the island. It quickly became a bed and breakfast, which remains in business to this day. Passed down within the family, a man named Roscoe Jones owned the Roanoke Island Inn at some point after Asa had passed away. In addition to running the inn, Roscoe was also employed by the U.S. Postal Service and is said to have taken great pride in his work. However, he was unexpectedly let go from his position, which resulted in him... refusing to leave the confines of his bedroom and passing away soon after. Shortly after his death, family members and guests began seeing an apparition walking into the front doors of the inn quite frequently. They believed it to be the spirit of Roscoe on account that the apparition always wore a postman's uniform. He's often heard walking back and forth throughout the inn at night. Blinds are often mysteriously put up or down, and radios like to suddenly turn off and on as well. Every once in a while, vases and other delicate objects will be found smashed to bits on the floor at the hotel.
Ooh.
So, he's really mad he got fired.
Dude, I would be mad too.
Yeah. Support your local postman.
Yes. Support the USPS.
Yeah. Okay.
I love getting mail.
Thank you for listening to our TED Talk. And then lastly, we have the Pioneer Theater. Built in 1918, there's no question that the Pioneer Theater is a landmark structure on Roanoke Island. Some Roanoke Island locals believe the old movie theater is haunted by a former family member who owned the business and continues to watch over the place, demanding people be respectful of one another. Cell phone use is strictly prohibited inside the theater, and it's said that a ghost will knock your phone out of your hand if you try to use your mobile device during a screening.
I love that. That's literally funny and also very scary.
Yeah. I also feel like, well, I don't know when this person passed away, but, like, if they don't know what phones are, they're like, ah! Yeah, what is that?
It's the devil's rectangle.
So, in conclusion, the lost colony of Roanoke remains an enduring mystery that continues to fascinate and perplex scholars and enthusiasts alike. Despite centuries of speculation and investigation, the ultimate fate of the settlers remains elusive. The various theories surrounding their disappearance, from conflicts with Native Americans and natural disasters to potential encounters with Wendigos or lizard demons, highlight the complexity of this historical enigma. However, based on its past, there's no doubt that the island possesses a fair share of negative energy that could play into its propensity for paranormal activity. As efforts to uncover the truth persist, the lost colony of Roanoke serves as a reminder of the enduring allure of unresolved mysteries in our collective history.
Ooh.
The end.
You mic dropped with that one.
Boop.
Now I really want to go find, like, an hour-long video essay on YouTube about the lost colony. Yeah,
I was really
hoping
that Ghost Adventures went there, but they didn't.
That's surprising.
I know. I guess because, like, it's more so an unsolved mystery versus a haunted location. But
yeah, but you'd think, you gotta assume.
You gotta, and that's the whole point. It's like, ghosts. Don't you want to investigate?
Just in case?
Just, like, mysterious places.
Yeah.
And discover something rather than, like, go somewhere that everybody already knows is haunted.
They probably, for like, not to be boring, but for the show's purpose, they probably want to go somewhere where they're guaranteed they're gonna get something. To get a little nibble, a little bite. Yeah, I want to watch a video essay, or I feel like something like the Discovery Channel would have done like a great special on the Lost Colony. Oh, yeah.
I know the History Channel's got something on it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. That was a great story.
Thanks.
And I guess this brings us to our paranormal protection tip of the week. This week, we're talking about iron. This is a metal that is thought to be very important for humanity in protection against the dark and supernatural. The folklore and mythology behind its importance is varied worldwide. Horseshoes are probably the most well-known charms that originated as iron protection or providers of good luck. It is believed in many European cultures that horseshoes are good luck and that if they were made of iron, which was an available metal, it would also ward off bad spirits and prevent the visit of unwanted otherworldly guests to their homes. And you have a horseshoe, it's not iron, but you have a horseshoe necklace.
I do. Do you not? I do. Yeah. I wore it yesterday.
Nice.
Yeah. I wonder if the colonists had access to iron.
I don't know.
Like, was iron expensive?
Was there
iron. Come on.
Well, I don't know.
But I don't know if they brought any to the colony with them.
Look, you'd have to ask them because I ain't got no clue.
Well, I can't because nobody knows what happened to them.
See, and that's the thing.
Look, I'm not saying anybody should go sit in the middle of Roanoke with a Ouija board. I'm not. I'm not going to.
But we don't endorse it, but if someone were to do it, you could report back to us and tell us what happened.
And see if anybody tells you anything. But we don't condone.
No, we don't. And with that, thank you so much for listening to yet another episode of Don't Fuck With Ghosts. Please be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at DFWG Podcast.
You can join our Patreon at patreon.com/DFWG podcast for all our bonus content. Shout out to our current patrons, Brittany, Nikki, Jeremiah, Jennifer, Katie S, Katie T, Joanna, Sunday, David, and Ali. And you can send in your encounters to our email or to our Instagram DMs at DFWGpodcast@gmail.com.
And please make sure to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps us to grow our community, and we're grateful for any reviews and feedback that you send our way.
Yeah, so remember, get a hold of some iron.
And always stay away from Ouija boards.